Triple M rocks the NRL 24/7 through the Triple M app. Thanks to Ream. Steady, hot and strong. Install a Ream.
Let's get underway.
Saturdays were made for this. The biggest names and the biggest games. Right here.
Woo! For King G, where comfort is king.
2, 3, 4. Hey, ho, let's go.
Triple M rocks the NRL.
Welcome to the Triple M Saturday Scrum.
Yeah, nice to be with you with this abbreviated version of the show. Just under an hour to share with you. But, of course, it's all about tomorrow. Tomorrow afternoon, tomorrow evening, 7:30. It is the Panthers taking on the Storm. The 2020 NRL Grand Final should be a sensational game of rugby league. 1 versus 2. The best, the cream, has risen to the top. Who is going to win and why? Let's get our early predictions in from Nathan Brown, Emma Lawrence and Ryan Girdler. Girds, obviously, you've got a lot of emotion invested in this. If you just switch off that ticker for a second and go into brain function, how do the Panthers get the job done?
Well, they need to start better than they have the last couple of weeks, Tony. I wouldn't be letting a side like the Melbourne Storm, who can just suffocate you out of the game, get off to a good lead. We saw that last week with what they did to the Raiders. So they kind of need to start well. They need to find their rhythm. And then it just comes about all the little things that you do in big games. It comes about your kicking game, your chasing game. They've gone through the season with a really high completion rate and doing all those things right. So they want to make sure they don't get in, you know, to the biggest game of the year and not do, you know, the things that have gotten them there. That's super important. Defensively, the Melbourne Storm will try and they'll attack you from anywhere on the field. They'll come from out from their own end. They'll spread it left. They can spread it both sides of the field. So I think being ready, not just with the ball, but especially defensively down their end. So when you put the kick chasing that on, like not relaxing if you're out on the edges and just thinking that, you know, it's going to stay in the middle, always being ready, because they're guys that have just got, you know, tries in them from all over the park, and they can score long distance ones really,
more
really
than any
competently
other team
as
this
well.
Year,
so yeah, that's something they need to be aware of, but just doing what's got them to where they are.
What about, we saw Tyrone May, a late switch, and he played in the centres and Nathan was on the bench and didn't end up coming on at all. What do you think they'll do, or what do you think they should do? Because is that a waste just having
Well, they
Nathan
can't
there?
Do that. I think it's definitely a waste. So they need to make a decision at some point that who's going to start. And you can have Tyrone May on the bench because he's a guy that can cover a lot of different positions in the halves and in the back row and whatnot. But you can't have a centre like Nathan on the bench if you've got Capewell there as well. You're just covering the same spot. So coaches, this time of year, Brownie, you've got to make some tough calls. Guys, you know, there's probably 20 guys in that squad that deserve to play in the grand final, and he's got to leave three of them out.
And there's some real hard ones in there. Like you look at young Brent Nadine, obviously, you know, he got an opportunity last year from Ivan and did some really good stuff and played every game this year. But, you know, during this sort of COVID period, teams have probably changed a little more than most years. You know, so there's a lot of players that have probably contributed for both clubs who aren't going to take a part. But when a player, you know, we had Zane Tedovano last year, he missed out after playing most games. They're horrible calls that coaches have got to make, but at the end of the day, the coach has got to, can't go on hard, he's got to go on head, doesn't he? So I'm sure Ivan will make the call which he thinks best suits. And as Gerd said, I thought Nathan on the bench last week was the right call because, you know, with the head knock situation, the way the game is today, you know, a bloke who's a specialist back who can actually cover the positions, if you don't have a Capewell on the bench who, again, can play numbers of positions, so I fear that if Capewell does play, that unfortunately young Brent might miss out, which would be horrible for him.
Speaking actually of missing out, Kurt Capewell during the week spoke about that too, because in 2016 was it with the Sharks, he was 18th man, and he just said it's a tough call. He only just started playing first grade really, but he said he'd, you know, played those games up to it, even played the prelim, but then it's just one of those things. Yeah,
and the Sharks carried. They carried it back on the bench who actually had to go on and play on the wing in that game.
Yes.
Yeah, I think it was Gerard Beale might have started. Yeah. He might, and it worked out a great call by the coach. You know,
I think he said, was it Tagatese that might have come back from injury
Tagatese,
as well?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's just one of those things that it happens. But being part of it would be strange, but not being able to go out in the field, it'd be tough. It's like you get a little bit of a taste, but not quite there.
Gerge, you mentioned it. Melbourne Storm were renowned for that being that big forward pack and play steady football, just cut the ball forward, kick the ball well, do all of those things, let Cameron Smith guide them around and do it. But they, this year they have coupled that with enormous pace in their backs, with Ryan Pappenhausen, with Josh Adokar, with Suliasa Vinavalu on the wings. That back three is incredibly potent.
But and they've changed the way that they play, haven't they, over the years? We've always spoken about the big three, and they generally used to like to go through the middle of teams, you know, with little, you know, trick plays and combinations and play short sides and the like. But now that they've got the Fox out there on that left-hand side and they've got Pappenhausen at the back and they've got Olam, a guy that's just basically come from nowhere and to be one of the most dominant centres in the competition. I mean, they've got to get these guys the ball and the opportunity. And I think, obviously, the game's changed as well. So, you know, if you're doing the right things and creating momentum through the middle of the field, which not many packs can go with the Melbourne pack, if you think about it, they've got a Sofa Solomona at 13. So their go forward's ridiculous. And then you've got the subtleties of Cameron Smith just getting these guys on the ad line. So eventually what that does, it just compresses your defence and strips your numbers on edges. So then they've just got the confidence in their game now to just give the football to those guys and they just make things happen. And that's a real concern. Penrith have the same sort of abilities, Tony, though. If they can win that battle or just compete in the middle there, they've got guys on the edges that can do the same thing. I remember watching that Roosters game and Viliami Kikau is a big in for Penrith this week because he's got so many different attributes to his game. Now against the Roosters, usually you'll find when you play those little shifts down the edges, you'll get the back or the centre will run sort of the lead run. The forward will run the lead run, and you'll have the winger, the fullback, or the centre coming out the back, and they'll sort of run around the back of the shape and try and create the play. Well, sometimes they run. They rung Crichton as that lead runner, and they put Kikau out the back, and he does little tip-ons for the winger, and Mansour scored a great try against the Roosters doing that. So they've got a lot of strings to their bow as well. But, yeah, Melbourne, they're as potent as they've ever been.
If you're a coach, how do you go about it, or do you even bother addressing how do we stop Cameron Smith?
Well, the biggest thing you can do is limit the opportunity he gets by the physical part of the game. It's basically it'll be a game of chicken on the advantage line. And, you know, for Penrith to give the defence the best look at Cameron Smith, you need to get your initial contact well. You know, the way the game's played today, if you don't contact well in the initial part of the contact, you're pretty much guaranteed a faster ruck, which has been obviously a great win for the game, for all of us in general, for spectators, for smaller people playing the game. So it's been great to see that. But if Penrith can win the collisions or at least go 50-50 on the collisions, you know, that'll give him a good chance of getting a better look at Smithy. But that's one of the great advantages that Melbourne have this year than what they haven't had in the previous few years. You know, the two biggest advantages they have now for me is they've found their replacement for Cooper Cronk, which was, you know, last year Jerome only come in at the back end, back part of the year, you know, to play that position. He's had a whole preseason working with Cooper and working with Bellyache. And he's really entrenched in the role. So I'm expecting the seven to be far more advanced this year, which we've already seen in the bigger games. And the fact that, you know, their bench just lacked potency in the previous few years, the Storm, they had a smaller bench, hard workers, where now, you know, they could come off the bench tomorrow with, you know, they could start Dale Finucane at lock. When Dale was fit, that's where he was playing. And you bring Big Nelson off the bench, who's big, mobile, international. Young Tino is going to play for Queensland, and he's going to represent big, mobile, and you bring Brandon Smith on, who's the pocket rocky. You know, so their bench now is far, far better, and all that does is it allows Cameron Smith to be in the contest for 80 minutes and on playing off the front foot. So if Penrith's going to win, someone in their, you know, their forward pack's going to be outstanding if they win the contest for me.
Em, you've mentioned it's been different build-up this year to grand finals past because of COVID, so there's been not quite so much intensity, I guess, not so many things that the players have had to go through. Does that help the Panthers, a younger side?
According to the one, so I had a chat with Appy Corrissau, and he said it does, and particularly because they're so young. He said, from his experience in 2014 with the Bunnies, he said, this is honestly so different. He said, it doesn't really feel that much like a grand final week because they did all their media on Sunday. So they went around and, you know, we sat down and did one-on-ones with them all. They had their training session Tuesday where fans were there, but even still, it's not the same with posing for photos and autographs and all of that sort of thing. And that was pretty much it. Then they just, he said they've gone back into regular training. So it doesn't really, they don't have the breakfast, they don't have all of the media commitments. So he said, if anything, I think it will help the younger players because it doesn't really feel that different. So, and he's been there before and knows what it's about. And he said, I'm telling you, it's got a very different feel, which he said he quite likes. And for him, interesting, actually, he said for him, he doesn't really count his 2014 premiership because he only came in at the last minute as well for Isaac Luke, who was suspended. So he said, honestly, I felt so guilty. I don't really feel like I earned that premiership ring. So he said, I want one that I feel like I earned. This was my team. You know, he said that was Isaac Luke's team, not mine. So many great storylines this year, which is something that I've been enjoying this week.
Well, the other two premierships that Penrith have won, think about, you know, the dummy halves and the role that they've played. Royce Simmons in 91 was, arguably the best on the field. And then Luke Prittis, who got the Clive Churchill in 2003. Yeah. So the dummy halves a key role for Penrith in grand finals. That's how he's up to it tomorrow.
They've been training. They've been throwing the balls in buckets of soapy water this week in case it is wet weather footy tomorrow night. You know, and does that wet weather, you know, help anybody? Obviously, help anybody, but who handles it better?
Yeah, well, I mean, Brownie spoke about the collision. It's crucial that, you know, the playmakers just make sure they give their guys just a little bit, you know, more time to catch and get the ball in within the good grip. And also errors are crucial, Tony. So, you know, Penrith are a little bit guilty of it last week. And I think that was probably a really good preparation for them playing there. It was the conditions weren't great. The ball was slippery. They made a lot of errors, but at least they've been in that environment in those situations and they put themselves under a fair bit of pressure and they handled that as well. So, yeah, I think that probably put him in good stead for tomorrow, but it's just all about, you know, the simple things, Tony, and high completion rate, good kick chase, simplify the game and be super aggressive in the middle.
Oh, can't wait. We're going to chat with Royce Simmons in a little while. Read his mail as well next, though, Coach's Corner with Mr. Nathan Brown.
Responsible. The Triple M Sunday Sinbin.
Nice to be with you on a Sunday afternoon.
Triple M rocks footy.
Yeah, well, thanks to King G, where comfort is king. While we're tuning into Legends on the Field, we need a shout out to the Aussie Legends of Workwear Hard Yakka and their new Raptor Active range. All right, it is time for this.
The Coach's Corner with Nathan Brown.
All right, Brownie, what do you have for us?
Why I think it's wrong to say that one player is the greatest ever player in any code of in any sport.
All right, so the discussion that's been around Cameron Smith of late as the greatest player of all time.
Yeah, I believe that personally that it's generational, and I say that because of the way the game evolves and the way that different players and different coaches learn from people of the past and then add to it, and that's how the rugby league evolves or how tennis evolves or AFL evolves. It's all the same. And if we look at Cameron Smith and the art of dummy half, I suppose, and you know the way the game changed and who actually changed the way dummy half was played was actually Benny Elias. Dummy half was more about hooking for the ball and, you know, it was just throwing the ball off the ground to forwards, you know, and Benny Elias was the first hooker who played like a halfback, I suppose, and if Benny didn't start that tradition, Cameron Smith may have been what a lot of other halves were back in the days, a slower half or 5'8". Yeah, so if you look at Benny Elias, when Benny first came, he was the first one that really changed the way the game was played, and then kids then liked the way that was done, and a lot of blokes that, you know, played first grade in the coming years after that were kids that played 5'8" or halfback, but probably didn't have the speed or whatever was required to be a top line halfback. So we all said, well, what's our best option? Our best option is to go to hooker and try and play like Benny Elias, and then the next advantage is what people get off that is different coaches learn from Benny how Benny played and they learn what plays work for him and then they add to him. So, you know, Tim Sheens, I believe, to my knowledge, is the first coach that actually had the hooker as one of the main controllers of play because for years it was 7 and 6.
Yep.
I think Sheensy was one of the first coaches that actually really had the dummy half where he actually controlled the team.
With Steve Walters?
With Stevie Walters, yeah. And then obviously he did that with Robbie when he went to the Tigers and through that and how he used Robbie as well and how he used, you know, Steve Waddle's obviously a more robust player, but he still had lots of plays around the ruck for Steve. And then, you know, Cameron Smith comes on and Cameron Smith has the advantage of the great coach of Bellyache, who's one of his great mentors was Tim Sheens, and that's how the game evolves. And obviously I'm Cameron Smith's biggest fan.
Yep.
But as saying someone's the greatest, I just think if Cameron Smith was born in the 80s, he couldn't have been the player he was today because he wouldn't have got the same opportunities for the, because the coaches wouldn't have known how to help introduce him to the game as effectively. If you look at Andrew Johns, some of the things Andrew Johns learned, he'll tell you himself, he learned them from Ricky Stewart. He learned from Alfie Langer. Andrew Johns will tell you that himself. So, again, that's my point is in any sport or any code, I don't believe we have the greatest. I believe we have the greatest of a generation. I don't think anyone would argue that Cameron Smith's the greatest of this generation, but I think any one person being the greatest, you know, a lot of their games evolve from the people before them and the coaches before them.
So interesting, isn't it? Because it is a debate that people just want to get into all the time, don't they? I mean, whether it be cricket, it seems someone like Don Brabin, because of the numbers, the statistics, he was so far ahead of his generation that people think, well, you know, he's got to be, and his numbers still stand up. But you're right, it depends on who is playing against, all those kinds of things. For rugby league, it's interesting that Cameron Smith certainly is. The highlights reel for Cameron Smith isn't terribly exciting, but the job he does is amazing.
Oh, what he does is Cameron Smith, you know, first of all, he's probably one of our greatest competitors, and that probably gets under the nose of New South Wales people because he'll sort of go, he'll push the boundaries to win, which all great leaders do. But the greatest thing he is what he makes other people look good. And that's the greatest compliment that any sports person can get that plays in a key position is if you make your teammates look better, you're an outstanding player in my books.
Can you narrow it down then? Will you go so far as to say, for example, Wally Lewis is the greatest Origin player?
Well, again, we all would have said that, and then Cameron Smith came along, didn't he? You know? And then you talk about grand finals. People talk about grand finals. Norm Praven won 10 in a row.
Yep.
You know, like, so the game just evolves. And back then, St. George had a big advantage because one of St. George's art of recruitment then was they go and buy one of the best players from the team that was going to challenge them most because they could.
Yeah.
You know, so the game evolves so much, and so much is learnt from people of the past, coaches of the past, players of the past, that it's only natural that someone's going to come along and be better than the last people because they've got a far bigger advantage than the last people.
I like how you used Benny Elias, but out there before when we were talking about what you were going to talk about, you said, if it wasn't for me, Cameron Smith.
100% good. I can't deny that.
But Brownie, don't you see what you're doing? You're ruining pub arguments. I mean, this is hours and hours of fun. Blokes sitting around,
well, maybe
and women
he's creating
sitting around.
More.
Well, I don't know. Are you?
Yeah, more, because then
you
we'll
argue
have arguments per generation.
Can you talk about it or can you not?
You can talk about it, but if we're saying that we can't say who's the greatest of all time because it doesn't really fit, there's different
cases. And where does the generation end? What's the cutoff?
Yeah, if you look at coaching now, I think we'd all agree that the best coach of the past 20 years has been Craig Bellamy. I don't think anyone could deny that.
No.
But before that,
the first schooner isn't even drunk, and we've agreed on that one.
Before Wayne Bennett had won six, and before that there was Jack Gibson. Now, Jack Gibson mentored Wayne Bennett. He was Wayne Bennett's one of his great mentors. Now, who'd Wayne Bennett work with? Craig Bellamy. And Craig Bellamy worked with Tim Sheens, another one of our great, great coaches who won four comps. So
can't we compare them? Can we not argue about Wayne Bennett's better than Tim Sheens?
No, because Wayne had an advantage over Jack because he gets all Jack's good and learns how to use that, and then he gets his own stuff, and that's how you gain experience. And then the next bloke learns, and that's how the cycle goes, I believe. That's why I personally like to talk about who's the best of a generation.
And it's always hard to talk about some of the generations gone that you didn't experience, but would you say, Brownie, that he's had more influence over result than any other player that's played our game?
Cameron Smith?
Yeah.
It'd be hard to argue in this generation he hasn't, but you go back to the Dragons, as I said, Norm Praven won 10 grand finals in a row.
Mm.
So Norm Praven must have had a fairly, fairly significant impact on results back in his day to be able to keep playing and do that. No other team played in that Dragon side for as long. I think maybe the other longest serving was maybe six or seven in that,
yep.
I think. Yeah, so, but to our generation, Gerds, I don't think anyone's influenced the game like Cameron Smith, no.
So you've ruined the fun. No one can have the
argument. I've ruined all the fun.
Not only that. Well, before that, I mean, the mobile phone and Google ruined the pub argument fun. You know, you're having a little argument about who did this, and then somebody's gone and looked it up, and they tell you, don't tell me. That's three beers worth of discussion right there.
They've been arguing.
That's why no one's talking anymore, Tony. Nothing to talk about.
We all know everything.
Everyone's been arguing in the basketball lately, haven't they, about Michael Jordan and LeBron James.
Yeah,
and
correct. Yeah.
And then you go back and there was a bloke that won about eight or nine in a row and he doesn't even get a mention now. So Wilt Chamberlain, one of them. One of them won eight or nine rings in a row and he's not getting a mention. So that's because for all of the people of the last generation or two, they wouldn't even know who he was.
True.
Yeah.
Speaking of Cameron Smith, this is pretty incredible.
He was tall. Big guy.
came across during the week a stat. So the average career of an NRL player is 43 games, and Cameron Smith is playing his 42nd finals match.
Mm. Wow.
Oh, what a player.
42nd finals match.
Greatest of all time.
Yeah, what a player.
Of this era.
Yeah.
Saturday Scrum, read his mail is next.
The Triple M Sunday Simbi.
Nice to be with you on a Sunday afternoon.
Triple M rocks footy.
And also on a Saturday afternoon, but we will join you from 4 tomorrow afternoon. This version of the show, Emma Lawrence will be there. But I think after the first hour, we are joined by this man. Brent Reed, hello and welcome.
Hello, peeps. How are you?
Peeps. Very, very well.
Hey, Reedy.
Oh, I am. How are you?
I'm well. You miss me?
I see you stole the sideline gig for grand final from me. Got under my guard, snuck in there.
Just been doing my best to white-ant you.
Don't tell Dobbo, it'd be filthy.
Oh, no, we already had that out last week.
Dobbo said, don't get too comfortable, that's my gig.
Oh, but he did endorse M. He did.
Really? I believe that.
He endorsed her.
I can see Dobbo tonight, tomorrow night, watching the grand final through, or listening to the grand final through gritted teeth as Emma carves it up on the sideline.
Yeah, it's good to listen through your teeth rather than your ears all the time. What about Kyle Flanagan? What do you have for us?
Yeah, look, there's a bit of mail obviously around that was going to get done on Friday with Canterbury. The latest for here was probably get done on Monday or Tuesday with Canterbury. So, look, next week's a big week. Obviously, November 1 comes and the silly season begins. I did a bit of mathematics yesterday, and I think there's about 35 to 40 million bucks worth of players who are actually up for grabs because, you know, obviously on November 1, they enter the last year of their contracts, and once that happens, they can table formal offers. But obviously, Kyle won't get that far. I think Kyle will get done at Canterbury, I think, around Monday or Tuesday. And obviously, the Roosters will move on, and they'll sort some things out and do their own things. I've obviously got to do James Tedesco, so I reckon the next month or so is going to be a bit of mayhem, a bit of madness.
Who were some of the bigger names on that list?
Well, the big one's James Tedesco. I mean, he's an obvious one. You know, I expect he'll get done at the Roosters. They're talking a 3-year extension worth about $3.3 million. I think his cams come in with a bit of a higher number than that, but I don't expect the Roosters will extend beyond that because that's not Nick Politis' way. If Teddy's cam want to push it, I think, you know, don't be surprised if Nick and the Roosters walk away as good a player as he is because they don't like being held to ransom. So I'd expect that to get done because Teddy wants to stay and the Roosters want to keep him. So that's the biggest one. I think 3 years, about $3.3 million. But there's a host of players on there. I mean, the Broncos in particular have got about five or six guys who are all November 1 guys. I mean, guys like Anthony Milford, Jack Bird, obviously. I still think Jack's a chance to go into the Dragons. But Milford's a really interesting one. It's an interesting time for the Broncos because he's coming off a really difficult few years, Anthony Milford. And I think the Broncos are going to take their time. I don't think they're in any rush to re-sign him. So he'll be available if someone wants to come in and make a play for him.
All right. Now, what about the Storm and their motto? What's this about?
Yeah, there's a couple of interesting things about the Storm coming into this grand final. One is April 22 this year was the 10-year anniversary of the salary cap scandal. And the players were away then, or if you remember, it was in COVID lockdown. The Storm got all their players together and basically via Zoom, they played a video of that period and the 2 years afterwards because Craig takes great pride in the 2010-2011 teams because of the way they played through that period. 2010, they were playing for no points. 2011, they basically were pulling guys from anywhere. Jamin Lowe had retired. Adam Woolmer was backpacking around Europe. So they showed the current guys, those two teams, and they said, now, this is the grit and resilience on which this club's built. The second thing was, during that period, Craig was watching a movie. It was the Clint Eastwood movie, Heartbreak Ridge, mm-hmm. one of his great movies. And there's a scene in that where Clint basically addresses the guys and he says, you know, you need to overcome, you need to adapt. And that became the Storm's motto this year, overcome and adapt. So Clint Eastwood, if they win tomorrow night, can take a little bit of credit for the victory.
Well, that said, what Clint was quoting is the US Marines mantra, you improvise, you overcome, you adapt.
It.
So it's not just Clint's work there.
I'm not sure Craig Bellamy was aware of that. the first he'd heard of it was when Clint came up with it.
Well, he was also the first person to say, make my day, but that's okay.
Any Warriors news for me, Reedy?
Oh, not today, Brownie. You got some for me?
No, you normally give it. I normally look forward to coming Saturday, so I know it's happening at the club I'm going to.
I was talking to your great mate yesterday, Peter O'Sullivan. He's been in lockdown. He was wondering why you weren't over there in lockdown with him. He was filthy.
Yeah, my lockdown's coming.
Oh, okay. When are you heading over?
Waiting for my permit to come through, mate. Once it comes through, I'll be on the road.
Okay, well, if you're still at Triple A, well, if you're working tomorrow, I'll come up with some mail
for you. I'm on tomorrow, so see if you can come up with something for me, all right?
Come up with something, yeah. I'll just
even just make something up, Reedy. Just get me excited.
Why stop now, Brownie? You've been doing it all year.
Reedy, if you come up with some good mail, maybe you'll get an invite to the Saturday Scrums long lunch to end the season. What do you think?
First I've heard of that.
Yeah, you weren't invited, but you might get a start. I'll consider it.
A few people won't be happy to catch out the bag now. Because you know what I'm like, Em? I'll just turn up. Was it a free lunch or we got to pay?
Oh, honestly. Journalists, eh? Journalists.
How's that relevant?
Yeah. Reedy, we will. It's free for you tomorrow, i.e. we don't pay you. You'll be joining us, I think, at 5 o'clock at ANZ Stadium. Yes. Just quickly, a day out, you got a tip for tomorrow evening?
Well, everyone I've spoken to is tipping Melbourne, which has me concerned because when everyone's tipping them, they're that short of favourite. I suspect an upset may be in order, but I think Melbourne.
All right, Reedy, lovely to talk to you. We'll catch up with you in the flesh tomorrow.
Good as gold, guys.
And next, he is Panthers legend. He's won himself an NRL grand final. He is Roy Simmons, and he joins us on the Saturday Scrum. Thanks to King G.
The Triple M Sunday Simbi.
Nice to be with you on a Sunday afternoon.
Triple M rocks footy.
This, of course, isn't the Sunday Sin Bin. This, of course, is the Saturday Scrum. But it's just a preview of what will happen tomorrow when you join us as we lead into a huge grand final. The Panthers taking on the Melbourne Storm. And what a joy and a privilege it is right now to catch up with one of the heroes of the Panthers, not just in a grand final, but across his entire career. I am, of course, talking of the great man himself, Roy Simmons. G'day, Royce.
Good afternoon.
Must have been another huge week for you with commitments and people want just a little piece of you memorizing what happened to you a few years ago, 1991, but also looking forward to what's going to happen tomorrow evening.
Yeah, it's been a great week. You know, it's been a lot of fun and I think the players are all enjoying it as well. Well, they always enjoy anything they do. They're boys that get on very well together, but it's the town's all a buzz. You know, I went for a bit of a walk this morning and cars going past with the flags and everything out of them. All the homes have been all done up, and the town's really looking forward to the game.
Hey, Simo, it's been an interesting couple of years at the foot of the mountains. Did you expect a season like this from this young squad?
Oh, I was probably thinking maybe another 12 months because they're still a pretty young side. But the one thing I think that's helped them, a lot of these boys have come through the various grades together. Even some boys have come down from the country. Originally, they've come down and they've come down on them weekends and played, you know, SG ball, jersey flag, whatever the case might be. And they've all come through and they've all, you know, played with each other. You know, the halves have played together and you know, not the whole team, but a good percentage of the team have just come together through footy. It's just like any other weekend for them. I think they're just going out to play. They're going out to enjoy themselves. So I watch them at training. As I said, they're laughing and cackling to themselves all the time. But at the same time, they're training the house down as well. You know, it's they just got the balance right, and you know that partnership they've formed over the years is just carrying on.
Royce, we don't get a grand final week without seeing you scoring and jumping up and down. Do you still get as excited today as you did back then?
No. Parts of the body don't work too well. It takes me a while to realise it actually happened too. Everything's going a bit slow upstairs.
Hey, Rosie, it's Emma Lawrence. It's second time we've had a chat this week. So I've been stalking you, trying to get some good content. But when we had a chat earlier, you were saying about the letter you read before that 91 grand final. Can you tell us about that, the letter you got that you read just before you went on?
Yeah, well, you know, I was a player that probably, unlike the current Penrith boys who seem all pretty relaxed and enjoying it, I was a player that had to sort of get myself ready to play and spend plenty of time on my own. And, you know, and like no one talked me the day of a game too much, so I had to do that because I probably didn't have the ability of a lot of other players that are around. But I got ready for the 91 grand final and I was 100% sure I was ready to play. You know, I ticked all the boxes and I thought I'm ready to play, but as I got off the bus to walk into the game. My old mate Ronnie Mulock, who was a deputy premier of the state, and he was a really patron of our club, a very strong supporter of Penrith, and he really took me aside as a young person when I come down to make sure I had a house, you know, a job and all them things. Went to him all the time to ask him advice on certain things, and he handed me this letter. So I got off and I thought, and I went in, I hid in one of the toilet cubicles, and I read this letter, and it was, it was certain things that I won't go through, but it was, a lot of it was, it doesn't matter if you win this game or lose this game, you know, what you've done for Penrith, whatever. And it was really well put together, and he was very, very good at that sort of stuff. And next thing I found myself crying in the cubicles and that emotional about it, you know. And if I hadn't ticked all the boxes to say I was ready to play, but when I finished reading this letter from this great man, it was very emotional, and I was ready to play even a little bit more than what I was beforehand.
But Simo, that was a really unique year for yourself, wasn't it? Coming sort of in and out of first grade, hadn't played a lot of games, and then to go into the grand final. I'm not sure, how much of that final series did you play in?
I played in all the final series, and I played the last couple of games. We played the last game at Penrith Park. That's when I kicked that beautiful goal. I killed a trotter over at the Paceway.
You didn't make it that far.
So I played right through the all the semis, but I did my ankle in Challenge Cup final. Back then, used to have the Challenge Cup final, so I did my ankle in that, and I played again the next week because we had a few injuries out of the back of it, and I shouldn't have done, and it made it a lot worse. So I mixed about 8 weeks. I come back in the first round back. I started back in reserve grade. I did it again, then I missed another 5 or 6 weeks. I come back right at the back end of the season. I've got a couple of games under my belt, and then Gus pulled me aside and said, "Mate, I'm putting you back in." And I honestly thought, I'm not going to get back into this side because they're flying. You know, they're winning all the games. And I remember saying to my wife, I come home after my second last game was playing second grade. I had the last couple of games in second grade, as I said. And I come home and she woke me up next morning. She said, "Get up and go for your run," because every morning I used to get up and go for a run, you know, particularly after a game. And I said, "No, I'm not getting up this morning." I said, "There's no reason to get up." I said, "It's all over. You know, I'm playing reserve grade next week and it'll be all over for me." And she said, "Get up, you idiot." So I got up and went for my run and went to training the next night. And I said, "Well, Simo, you're right to play. You've had enough time now and you're back in the side and you're going to start the game every week, right through all the semis and all that sort of stuff." And so that gave me a lot of confidence that, I was going to start every game. And so obviously, I played the last game of the season in first grade, then sort of build into it. So, you know, time grand final come, I was, right to play the entire 80 minutes and hopefully do a good job, which, touch wood, all come good.
All right, Royce Simmons, it's always great to speak to you. Were you at the game or you at the Royce? Talk me through the Royce.
Oh, mate, I'll be at the game, but I'm sitting at the Royce now, actually, overlooking the Blue Mountains and the academy and where they all train. The boys had a light run today and the captain's run and, overlooking the water park and all that sort of stuff. And I know Gertz is going to get in and call me. He's going to say there's a Royce bar, mate.
Well, I just want to know.
Cafe Royce.
Is there? Royce.
Very classy place.
I bet. Royce? You tell me, there's an over-55s facility. There's a bar, a cafe. What else is there?
There's the Cafe Royce, well named, I thought. There's a
vegans in it, Royce.
A day spa and a gym. Oh, and a very nice library that hasn't seen much of me. There's a physio moving in shortly, but, which I'll make sure I use up. And there's an honesty bar. And I've been telling them, I'd probably give up now because I think they're onto me. What happens, this honesty bar every afternoon, everyone gets down there. They're a great mob of people, you know. So they get down there in the afternoon for about 3 hours, and I try to sneak past, but they catch me most days.
I thought you said it was an honesty bar.
Well, it is an honesty bar, and you've got to mark down how many drinks you have. So they're not onto me yet, but what I've been doing is I put down, when I have the first beer, I put down a stroke. Then I have another 10, and I put another stroke down, like about 11, but they only charge me for 2.
Roy Simmons, you are still a genius. Thanks so much. Hey, mate, enjoy tomorrow evening. You deserve it. And thanks for chatting.
All right, all the best. Cheers.
See you soon, mate.
All
right.
Here's Royce. Absolutely love it.
He's slowing down upstairs, all right, isn't he?
Absolutely. This spring, Ladbrokes is changing the way you multi, and with our new multi features giving you more chances to win. Remember, gamble responsibly. Tom Haggart joined us. G'day, Tom.
Hello, Tony.
All right. It's going to be a beauty, this game. Who are the punters going at?
Been an interesting game from a betting perspective. When the market first opened, it was one-way traffic for the Melbourne Storm. They still are $1.70 favourites, but in the last 48 hours, the money has turned a little bit, and there has been support for the Panthers at $2.25. So Storm's still the clear favourites here, but definitely some money coming for the Penrith Panthers.
And what's the first try scorer market looking like, Tommy? There's some Panthers up there, or is it dominated by the Storm?
No surprises here, boys. Josh Adokar is the clear favourite at $8.50. He's in outstanding try-scoring form. Vidivalu's there as well at $10. Then there's a host of Panthers at $11. Brian Tuohy, Josh Mansour and Stephen Crichton at $11, along with Ryan Pappenhausen. While there's been good money for Justin Olin for the Storm at $15.
And what about Clive Churchill? Cam Smith, don't think he's won it. Are we giving him any shot?
Yeah, it's the one thing missing from Cameron Smith's trophy room is the Clive Churchill medal. We've got him as the favourite here. He's $3.75 favourite. I think they'll find a way to try to get him to him if the Storm win, in my opinion. Nathan Cleary's on the second line of betting there at $4.50. Then there's a big gap to Ryan Pappenhausen at $11. And the value could be Cam Munster, who's $11 as well.
Tommy Hackett, thank you so much. We'll catch up again very soon.
Thanks, boys.
There he is. This spring, Ladbrokes is changing the way you multi, and with our new multi features giving you more chances to win, gamble responsibly. That won't be happening. They won't be trying to find a way to give Cam Smith the Clive Churchill medal. He'll be trying to find a way to get himself the Clive Churchill medal. Will he win it, Nathan Brown?
You'd be a game man to say he's not going to figure in the top couple. He's generally in the top couple of players every time he plays, isn't he? It's very rare he's not in the top sort of 4 or 5 players on the field, so I'm suggesting if Melbourne Storm win that he's going to be somewhere in the money.
All right. Well, sadly, 2 hours has absolutely flown by. But remember, we do join you from 4, but coverage starts at noon tomorrow, 1 o'clock, I should say, 1 p.m. from ANZ Stadium. We'll be there at 4 all the way through to the grand final. It is the Melbourne Storm and the Panthers. We'll catch up then. See you soon.
Triple M rocks the NRL 24/7 through the Triple M app. Thanks to Ream. Steady, hot and strong. Install a Ream.